copyright Forum of Christian Leaders. The contents contained on this website are solely for your own individual, non-commercial, and informational use. Any other use is strictly prohibited without our express prior written consent. See the full copyright disclosure at focalonline.org.
First of all, what you need to know, on the screen, under the title Power Questions, I have a sandcastle that was intentionally chosen for the first slide, because power is often perceived as it will be some great castle for us, yet it is, if it is not based on good foundation and it is not built out of solid material, then it will just fall apart like a sandcastle falls when the smallest wind or water comes by. One of the first questions is, how is the question of power relevant to our lives? It is a sobering information that I get session after session in my counseling sessions, when I would see somebody come and say, I have a pastor, I trusted him, I loved him, I looked up to him, I was on his team, and as the founder of this church, we planted this church together, but now that the church has grown, all relationships are broken, and there is power on top, but there is no relationship with the church. So many times I hear about abuse that are done to people in the church, done by a person who is leading a church, who has a powerful position, either an elder or a leader of the church or a pastor. It is heartbreaking for me to see, for example, sexual abuse done by pastors in terms of inviting young kids in there and saying, let's have a private prayer time, which ends up to be something else. Abuse of power is constantly there in our lives, and we see them, and many of them we have been hurt by. It is so sad to see when a prayer group would help somebody in their career to grow, would help them all the way up to the House of Parliament, and then within a year, the person up there in position forgets where he came from. So, is power relevant to our everyday lives? Yes. Are we in a powerful position, in a position that we have power? Yes. Everybody has some kind of a relationship that they are holding a position of power, one way or another. And we need to think about it. I sometimes hear Christians saying, no, power is really not a Christian issue. Well, let me read something to you from Matthew 4, 8 through 11. Again, the devil took him to a very high mountain and showed him all the kingdoms of the world and their splendor. All this I will give you, he said, if you bow down and worship me. Jesus said to him, away from me, Satan, for it is written, worship the Lord your God and serve him only. Then the devil left him, and angels came and attended him. Jesus was offered by Satan. I tell you what, you worship me, I give you power, I give you position. Jesus responded well. But if Jesus was tempted, then we are also tempted. If he responded well, then he's an example of how we should respond to it. The way we use our power is one of the most visible declarations of our Christ-centeredness or of our self-centeredness. The way we use our power is one of the most visible declarations of our Christ-centeredness or our self-centeredness. We need to remember it. So how is power and self relevant to each other? See, we often think that there is an event happening in our life And right away after the event, there is a reaction. And that's how we think. Event and reaction. A question and a reaction. An accusation and a reaction. But there is something in between. And that's me. That's me with all my history, all my life, all my woundedness, all my healing. That's me in its fullness. That comes in between. So what will affect my reaction to the event is how I am doing. What is going on inside of me? I'm doing executive coaching with high office people. It is so clear in front of me day after day that what is in the person, how the person has handled their woundedness, where what they base their life on, what they believe, what their convictions are, what their dreams, desires are, will determine their reaction to the event. What is it that we... What is the me in between? What is happening? Let me show you a couple things that are in our deepest core longings. We have a deep longing to find fulfillment and meaning in life. We have a deep longing to have a secure and safe environment. We have deep longing for a sense of worth, that somebody would say, wow, you're valuable. We have a deep longing to belong, to be unique and special. We want to be unique. You know, it's so interesting. I was just thinking about it today, earlier, that humanity couldn't handle that we were created unique. So humanity started to fight for equality. Now, once equality is offered, suddenly everybody's fighting for uniqueness. Just think about it. What are the dimensions of fighting for uniqueness in this world? Why? Because we can't handle the thought that we are all the same. And you know what? We aren't. It's time to learn that we are not the same. We are created very different. There's only one thing that we are same in, that Christ died for us. That's the only sameness that we have. We have a deep longing to be important, to be loved and to love, to be enjoyed and to enjoy, and to have a fellowship with God. Those are our core longings that we carry, that we are born with. We have them from childhood. One of the problems with these core longings is that somewhere at the very beginning of life, we are wounded. Wounded in one or two dimensions of those core longings. What I have seen and what I believe is that I mentioned now 8 core longings. Usually we are not wounded in all 8 the same way. We usually have 2 or 3 areas, and most of the time only 2, that deeply touch us. So when we have our wounds, let me show you something here. What happens to a child who is having their parents fighting, and as she or he sees her parents fighting, suddenly mom or dad yells at her and says, go to your room. All they say, go to your room. Probably because they don't want the child to see the argument, or they just don't want all the messing around with the kid here. This is too important to talk. So we don't want to deal with the kid. Go to your room. What will the child feel? I don't belong here. And what will this child, how will the child interpret the wound? Because children notice things very, very quickly by they interpret them very falsely. I remember when one of my daughters was about 9 years old, and one day she came into the kitchen and she looked at me and she said, Mom, what's wrong? This is one of my most sensitive children. And I looked at her and I said, honey, there is nothing wrong. I'm cooking dinner and that's it. So whatever, I didn't answer her. She looked at me and very persistently said, no, 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 mom, what is wrong? And I looked at her little, you know, cute ponytails and I said, sweetheart, there is really nothing wrong. Believe me, I'm just cooking dinner. Trying to fake the, you know, I'm all okay, mom. So she looks at me and she goes, mom, I know there is something wrong because of the way you're looking into the pot. Ever since then, I've been thinking about how do I have to look into a pot that I don't look like I'm not okay. So, thank you very much. But see, the child, when she's yelled at and said, go to your room, she experiences that there is something wrong, but it is not what will hurt her the most, but it will be the interpretation, the lesson. Because she will say, what will the child say? She or he will say, it is because of me. Why? I depend on mom and dad. I love them, they love me. They cannot be wrong, they cannot be false. They are nearly gods to me. So everything they do is okay. So there must be somebody at fault. Who is at fault? Of course me. And this is the first place for Satan to touch our lives. Because we start believing our false interpretation, they will become lessons that we have learned from our woundedness. And they are lies. I have not yet seen a client or a person sitting in front of me that wouldn't have to go back to those lies and check them out. Because see, woundedness won't hurt anymore. The fact that mom sent me out will not hurt me anymore. But the lesson that I have learned that I don't belong or that I am not lovable, I will want to kill the pain of it. Wounds hurt, but the interpretation hurts more. And many times they hurt for the rest of our lives. So we start using painkillers. And you know what power is? Position is a wonderful painkiller. Except there is a problem. All painkillers lose their effectiveness if the wound is not treated. So what do you need to do to not feel the pain anymore? You need to increase the dose. You need to have more power. You need to have power over more people. And what, whenever you got all that you dreamed of, what do you want more? Effectiveness lost. Increase the dose. So out of painkillers, dysfunctions develop. And out of dysfunctions, addictions develop. And our addictions become our idols because our life and our identities will depend on it. Actually, you don't need to come to any more of my lectures ever. Because this is all I say all the time. Honestly, you heard me once, you heard me all. Because I believe it's so powerfully true in our lives. And that's the tool of Satan in every single person's life, whether they are non-Christians or Christians. Because we are wounded, we hurt and we are hurt. And the question is, what do we do with this? See, power can give us a false feeling of safety. Power, personal achievements, which is one form of a power, have become our measuring sticks for our self-worth. Aren't we building our self-worth on how much have I achieved in my life? Isn't that what our kids are being taught at the school? And let me ask you a nasty question. Isn't that what we are counting when we are counting church growth? Isn't that what we are doing? What about the pastor who has a church of 25, living faithfully for the last 10 years, being perfect example for society wherever they live, but there is no growth? Are they worthless? According to numbers, yes. And I know I'm exaggerating, but I just would like to tickle your brain a little bit. The praise of others make us believe in our uniqueness. So what then when they won't praise us? What is it when they will say, they will not come out at the door and say, oh, wonderful job, Pastor. What then? How will I handle my question of uniqueness when a client stands up and says, I don't like what you're doing. I don't want to come here anymore. I have clients like that. All counselors have clients like that. Am I losing my uniqueness? When somebody questions me rather than praises me, have I lost my identity? Our questions, our positions make us feel important. Do you hear the pain killing in power? Do you hear the pain killing, the possibility of addiction, the possibility of idolatry in the position of power? See, when we fear people and we are trying to please people, that will lead to temptation. And the answer for that, we need to learn to fear God and please God, because that's the beginning of wisdom. So in our woundedness, we have a question. Am I fearing people's opinion and trying to please them so they will feed my wounds? They will kill the pain of my wounds? Or am I going to fear God and please God? Because that will be the beginning of wisdom. Let me show you the broken cycle of woundedness. I told you we have wounds. The question is, do we have to live with wounds for the rest of our lives? Because I believe that there is a road from woundedness to scars. You know what the difference is between these two words? I think all languages have these two words, don't you? Wounds and scars. Wounds are open, they are bleeding, they're red, they are infected, they are, you know, somebody approaches your wound and you go, oh, don't come, it hurts. Just think about the summer sunburn. We wouldn't even call it a wound, would you? Well, try to hug somebody with a sunburn. You will get your share from them. That will be total rejection. Don't touch it. That's your wound. You know what scars are? It's when you look at your scar and you go, I remember. It did hurt. If I think about the memory, I still feel the deepness of those memories. But I am free. I'm free. It doesn't guide my life anymore. It doesn't motivate me anymore. So how can we go from woundedness to healing? And I believe it's through the lies. We need to attack them. We need to attack them by Christ's healing, by the truth. Because that's the only way out. I don't believe in any other way out. And instead of addiction, we will feel the desire to serve for the glory of the healer. Do you see the difference? I remember one couple, they were one of my first couples ever came to me. It was down in a small village of Hungary. It was about 16, 17 years ago. And they came to me because they said they both agreed, they were a non-Christian couple. They said they both believed that their marital and sexual life needs to be rejuvenated. So they decided to have an open marriage, to have sexual contact with anybody they want to, and of course keep their marriage. They had three little children. And when they came to me, I said, so what's the problem? You're rejuvenated, aren't you? I don't get it. Why are you needing me? And they said, no. It worked for a while, about 2 months. Then we started to get really upset with each other. We started to be really hurt with each other. We started to feel rejected and not loved. We started to fear that the other one is not belonging to me anymore and I don't belong to him anymore. But what I want to show you, we went back to some of the previous lies. And when we went through the healing, Do you know what they did? Other than accepting Christ, I never told them anything about what they need to do in return. All I was doing, trying to bring them through healing. They started groups for young couples, young married couples struggling with their marriages. They went on telling people, this is what He has done for us. Because healing brings service. It's not because I must. Because it's because you cannot do anything else. I mean, think about it. When you realize it, when you really experience it, that He has saved me and He is here to heal me. The wonder of this experience makes you want to go, how can I return it? How can I serve you? How can I bring this glass of clean water to others? How can I help you? Because you don't need to suffer. I know, I've been there. So how does it come, our broken cycle of woundedness, into power? And the power questions. That would be my next slide, but I would like to stop here and ask you for your reflections, because before I go on, I really would like to hear what you see, what you heard before. So this is a slide I purposely put here to remind me that Gongo and Amuka, ask them how they are doing with these thoughts. Would you please bring questions, disagreements, agreements, thoughts? What do you have on these? How are you with... Does this woundedness cycle make sense to you? We all want to believe that we have all our core longings in line. We all are craving for that. And when somebody hurts us in one direction or the other, then we fight for it. And one of our first reactions is anger, saying, no, I'm not that. And actually we try to prove, the painkiller is actually trying to prove for the rest of my life, if I don't go through healing, that it is not true, that I am not lovable. Does it make sense? A sexually addicted man tells me when I'm in bed, then I experience that I am a man. I am somebody. I feel valuable. I feel powerful. So he keeps proving it to himself because he's so afraid that the lie is true. A woman who is totally overpowering her family keeps saying, I am worthy. I am worthy. My husband is leaving me and he is doing all sorts of businesses or ministries. He's never with me, probably because I'm worthless, because I have learned in childhood that I'm worthless. So I'm going to prove it with overpowering everybody around me that I am not worthless. So our pain killing usually is nothing else but an exact response to our pain, trying to prove that no, this is not true. But we cannot prove it to ourselves. We need to have somebody who comes there and says, look at yourself. What you are saying about yourself is a lie. And no psychologist, no counselor, no man can say it on a rational basis. Because in the minute you try to say, oh, look at what you have done, in that minute they will list twice as many examples of why I am not what you think I am. Look at the garden. What does he do? So God created Adam and Eve in his image. Just like him. And he breathed in them himself. So Satan comes and says, you cannot be that big of an idiot that you would believe that you are like him. Actually, you shouldn't be eating from that tree because he doesn't want you to be like him. That's his exact lie. Questioning their identity. And what do they do? Maybe I am not as good. Start believing the lie. And starts to go through self-definition. Trying to find a new identity that is more like God. Let me replace it. That is perfect. That's, yeah, original sin comes out. But then, ever since then, we have been doing it to each other. I am hurting my kids, and it hurts me to see the wounds that I have done to them. Even though I have tried my best to be the best mother of the world. That's the only award I would like to have. But we do this, and we go through self-healing processes, and actually the problem is comes right here, that we start killing our pain instead of going for healing. So the question is, how can we have power and not abuse power? So what are the power questions that we need to face? I think one is, where is the person in power? If I have, what are the powerful positions that I have? And in those positions, where am I in this cycle? Have I faced my woundedness? What am I hoping from my position? Have I come to the healer? And have I gone through healing? John Maxwell says there are, he lists the levels of leadership. He says one of the first level of leadership is weak. When people follow you because they have to, it's position based. They will follow you because they have to. Then he says the next level is people will follow you because they want to, because you're a natural leader. Somehow they just sense leadership in you and they want to follow you. He says the third one is people will follow because of what you have done for the organization. Now already it's your achievements. You have put down something on the table. And then he says people will follow because of what you have done for them personally. Now it is becoming a relational thing. It is what you have done for me. It's a lot more than what you have done for the organization. I will follow you because of what I feel indebted to you. Or maybe I just believe in you because of what you have done for me in my life. And then he goes on to the next level and he says, people follow because of who you are and what you represent. When I first heard these levels of leadership in a coach program, it was interesting how the trainer, the coach, represented all first four questions in details. And I went to question five, read it, and left it there. Because they had nothing to say about it. They had nothing to say about it. How will you become a person when people would follow you because of who you are and what you represent? What can they say about it without Christ, honestly? So the questions of power, of leadership and power, this is the question. What is it that will make people look at us and say, who you are, that's why I'm following you. What you represent, that's why I'm following you. It is a great challenge for me too. Because it is very easy to fall in the trap of performance and production. See, the world wants us to show what we are. What have we put down? And that puts a great amount of demand on us to prove ourselves. But actually, what Christ is saying is who you are is the most important thing. Not what you are, not what you have done, but who you are. Why would people want to follow us? I would like to show you what I have come up with. It's not research-based, it's experience-based, and it's my office-based. So, as a further fact, as a my couch-based. So, I think people want to see and want to follow more than personality. Everybody has personalities, but what they don't see is character. My father was a Christian psychiatrist back in the communist time. And he told me that there was, right after 1956, the Hungarian Revolution, there was a health board meeting in Hungary, where they called in all the Hungarian psychiatrists, and the board of the director of the health minister, that's why I think that's what you call it, health minister, told all the Hungarian psychiatrists present, you can treat people, you can treat personalities, but we do not want characters. Do you get it? It was given in law, in order. We do not want characters. We do not want identities. We just want personalities. Everybody's got one. But Christ is calling us to have a character like Him. As a matter of fact, I think our response to Him is a desire to have a character like Him. What are the characteristics that I would like to show you? I would like to mention to you four characteristics of a leader in power. It is confidence, a humbled heart, forgiveness, and servanthood. So, why would people want to follow us? The character is of confidence. I would define it this way: the person who knows the true dimensions of his battles. That is Emuke definition for confidence. We usually, that's not what we think. We think confidence is saying, I can do it, I can do it, I can do it. When I was a little child, my grandmother used to tell me a little Hungarian poem that I never heard ever before or ever after. But she said, honey, you don't want like to be like the little engine going up the hill. And I was like, why, what is the little engine like going up the hill? She says, when the little engine goes up the hill, he keeps saying, oh, God, help me. Oh, God, help me. But when he gets on the top, coming down, he will say, I don't care here if he helps me or not. I don't care if he helps me or not. I can do it myself. I can do it myself. I can do it myself. Isn't that how we are with power? Going up, oh God, help me. Once on the top, we don't realize that we start saying, I can do it myself. I can do it myself. And it's already a downward spiral. Finally, be strong in the Lord and in His mighty power. Put on the full armor of God so that you can take your stand against the devil's schemes. For our struggle is not against flesh and blood. That's what confidence is. That it is not against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the authorities, against the powers of this dark world, and against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly realms. Therefore, put on the full armor of God so that when the day of evil comes, you may be able to stand your ground, and after you have done everything, to stand. See, one of the great lies of power is that we have to do it, that it is our battle. That it is about us. It's a lie. It's not about us. And you cannot have enough confidence by saying it's about me. Somebody asked me about a year ago, Emuke, what if they take your position away and you can never do counseling in Hungary again? You know, somehow I even was surprised at my answer, but I thanked God very much for it. My answer was nothing. I start cleaning bathrooms and God will bless me and help me make a business in bathroom cleaning. Because this battle is not mine. But if I believe that my identity depends on it, the battle is mine, I will put myself into the front line of temptation. I think the character of a humbled heart. I'm sorry, one word here. I was thinking about putting this verse up here. Or just one little sentence. which is very similar to this. The battle is mine. That's the confident leader. And you know, when you believe it, that the battle is his, then you do have confidence. Because if God is for us, who can be against us? Do you hear the confidence in it? Yet, so many times I see Christian leaders not holding on to it. The character of a humbled heart, the person who knows where his power came from. When I was 16, I was going through a very hard time. I now look back and I say I was clinically depressed. But because I was going through a time of leaving Hungary as a political refugee and having my family torn apart and struggling with all sorts of moving and strange people and strange places and people left behind that I am grieving and all relationships that were told that I will never see my loved ones again. I remember one thing I told myself. Remember, I said one night in my bed, and I said, God, help me never forget what it was like to be 16. Little I knew what I am asking God. I thank him that he doesn't allow me to forget. As a matter of fact, I have a couple prayer partners who I regularly ask, if you ever see me forgetting where God has brought me out of, warn me, slap me in the face, kick me in the rear end, please, yell at me. I don't want to ever forget where he brought me out of, because he brought me out of Egypt. Actually, my Egypt is not communism. My Egypt is my darkness. And if I forget that, who called me and where he called me from, if I forget that, I will hurt others with my power for position. The character of a humble heart, the person can receive only what is given them from heaven. It is set in my note, in my phone, to remind me every 3 months. It's a verse that will suddenly, surprisingly, although I did it, but it will come out every 3 months. It will ring on my phone. And I will look at it, I'm saying, what is this reminder? I encourage you, if it's a question for your heart, put it on as a reminder. The humble heart is not the person who doesn't lead. We often think being humbled means you won't lead, or you will be quiet. Oh, how many years I have prayed that I could be quiet? It will never work. How many times I pray that I wouldn't have a quick answer? I always have a quick answer. Actually, before you pose the question, I already have the answer. I spent years praying that God would bless me with a humbled heart and I could just shut up. And it was so much of a relief when I realized being humbled means only one thing. I know that I can have nothing that wouldn't be from him. So, one of the questions of power and position is, can we have a humbled heart? Do we remember our Egypt, where he brought us out of? The next one is the character of forgiveness. Oh, how much pain I see in the church. About 2 weeks ago, in the evening, I was totally drained. One of the reasons I was drained, because that day, mistakenly, I have put four clients, four couples, four ministers next to each other in a row. Every one of them came because their leaders hurt them. How much pain I see in the church when Christians are hurting Christians. And the question of forgiveness becomes really, really a tough question when the person who sinned against you is your brother in service. The person who knows that he is forgiven by God, that's the character of forgiveness. I know that I am forgiven by him, and I will not forget it. That's when I can be forgiving. But see, forgiveness requires us to give up our rights. Actually, I call it give up the right to revenge. And we have holy revenges too. I'm sure you have experienced them. I can come up with quite a few of them. I'm very creative in coming up with revenge. I have a very cynical sense of humor, and that's one form of it. And I love it. At least I always laugh at it. So, can we give up the right to revenge? Be kind and compassionate to one another, forgiving each other, just as in Christ God forgave you. I really would like to stop here just for one more minute and say, most people who are struggling with mental disorder or relationship problems are stuck in the area of forgiveness. Two areas can be stuck. One is grief, and the other one is forgiveness. So if you see anybody or yourself being stuck emotionally, you feel like you just keep going on and on about some issue, or you feel that you are just emotionally overwhelmed, or you feel like you don't know what is going on with your relationship, everything seems to be tense and stressed, ask yourself, do I have an ungrieved loss? Do I have an unforgiven issue here? Yet, you know, forgiveness is so little dealt with. I know books are about, plenty of them are on the bookshelves, but very few times do I hear pastors preach about it. As a matter of fact, I never had a client who came to me and said, help me to forgive. I think forgiving is really a way to the cross when we die to ourselves. And we don't want to die. We always want the day after Easter. But there is no Easter without Friday. There is no life without death to ourselves. And finally, the character of servanthood. I would call this person the person for him. Power is not a privilege, but a responsibility, a call to service. You know, we can get exhausted in ministry. Actually, we can get exhausted without ministry. Actually, I can get exhausted just if I hear my morning phone ringing that I should get up. No, I am exhausted when I already have to set the alarm in the night before. But exhaustion can really make us not want to serve. So first of all, let me challenge you to take care of yourselves. Because many times, burnout is one of the primary reasons why we don't want to serve the way we would like to serve. I don't know if you heard the difference. Sometimes we don't want to serve anymore, although we would like to. But our bodies keep saying, I can't anymore. Stop it. But also, if for me a power is a painkiller, then for me, power is going to be a privilege and not a responsibility. Because I don't want to descend to service. For even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many. I remember when I attended a church where we washed feet. There were 3 years in a row when I went to a brethren school in America. I done my degree there, and I remember how interesting it was for me to go into the room where women would be sitting down and we would wash each other's feet. Well, it was a weird experience for the first time, I have to tell you. The first thing I noticed about myself, I looked around and I thought, where should I sit that I wouldn't have to wash her feet? Nice heart, huh? Heart of a servant, like Amuka, please do not have. My first reaction was quickly scanning the room. Oh my gosh, I don't want to serve her. I'm not washing her feet. Where should I sit so I don't have to? How humbling it was when she came up to me and asked me, can I wash your feet? Power is a responsibility to serve, because he washed our feet and he daily wants to wash our feet. And he never became less because of it. But he is lifted up high because he served for us, for life. This is power based on. I don't believe in any other form of power. The greatest among you will be your servant. For those who exalt themselves will be humbled, and those who humble themselves will be exalted. One of my favorite pastors was a friend of my father. On his 30th birthday, well, before his 30th birthday, he wrote a letter to Stalin. He saw signs above the fields of wheat, and the sign said, "Glory to Stalin for our harvest." So he wrote a letter to Stalin with some of his pastor friends, saying, "There are many things that you should be respected for, but as for the harvest, it is God who gives the sunshine and the rain. You cannot take that glory." On his 30th birthday, he was taken to Siberia for 8 years. When he came back, he survived. When he came back, he already had a son born that he never met, already 8 years old. He had his other children at home who didn't remember daddy, only from stories. You know what I saw in him? All he wanted to say, all he wanted to do was serving people so they would see the glory of God. I never once heard him complain. I never once saw him taking advantage of how people lifted him up. He always sat down. He looked to Christ and pointed to Christ. He never allowed himself to become the hero of the church. He had a powerful position because we were eager to hear every single word he had to say. All he did was stay humbled and exalted God. Are we ready for power? Can we handle power? Camus said, "The only way to deal with an unfree world is to become so absolutely free that your very existence is an act of rebellion." I love that quote. Obviously, I'm stuck in my teenage years because I still want to rebel. But think about it. How wonderful it would be if our own existence, the very existence, would be an act of rebellion. Let me put it further, an act of worship. Wouldn't that be just wonderful? That's the only way to deal with an unfree world. To become absolutely free. Do we have the tools to become absolutely free? Then you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free. The truth will heal you from your wounds. The truth will set you free. Not just from your wounds, but also for power. See, think about what you need freedom from and what you need freedom for. Because that's what I was trying to show you today. Freedom from our wounds and freedom for power. Because how wonderful it would be if we would have Christians in position, Christians in power, whose very existence is an act of worship to God. Well, thank you for your attention. And I don't know how much time we have left. Our time is up, I think. And I would like to go back to the very last. Become absolutely free that our existence is an act of, instead of rebellion, worship. Although I like to rebel. And then you will know this truth, and the truth will set you free. Would you mind if I would say a prayer for all of you? Our Father, in Jesus Christ, thank you what you have done for us. Thank you for bringing us out of Egypt. Thank you for your love and forgiveness. Thank you for your healing power. And thank you for putting us into positions where we can serve you. Guide us. I ask you, and we ask you, that you would touch every one of our hearts here. You see our woundedness. Put your hands on it. Heal us, Lord. And we ask you that show us the way to serve you in positions of power, when people would see you in our work, that they would praise your name because of what we can show through our positions and through our power. Use us for your service. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Amen. Thank you very much for your attention.